Manager. I'd like to present Tammy and Richard from the firm of I. Bailey to present the findings and review the CAFR for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. This is Tammy Miramontes. I served as the engagement partner for this audit. And with me is Richard Walker, and he was the in charge. So what I'd like to do is just go through our reports. We issue several reports in relation to the CAFR, and if you have any questions or comments, we can go through that. The first report that we issue is on page 10 of the CAFR. And this report covers the audit of the basic financial statements and discusses we have conducted our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards as well as government auditing standards. And also, it used to be OMB Circular A133, but the guidance has changed now. We follow uniform guidance, which is the single audit of the federal programs piece. So this report says that we have conducted our audit in accordance with all of those standards. We issue an opinion on the basic financial statements, which is the government-wide statements, the fund financial statements, and the notes to the financial statements. And we have issued an unmodified opinion on those financial statements, and that means that's the highest level of assurance you can get. That's a clean opinion. In addition to the basic financial statements, we also issue an in relation to opinion on all of the budget to actual statements, the individual schedules that are behind the notes, as well as the RSI. And we also issue an in relation to opinion on the schedule of expenditures of federal awards, which is further back in the document. And that's the schedule that details out your federal spending and is under the uniform guidance. We have issued an unmodified in relation to opinion on all of those schedules as well. And that's what that report is telling you, pages 10, 11, and 12. If you don't have any questions, the next report that we issue is all the way in the back, and it is actually on pages 86 and 87. And this report is the report that's required under government auditing standards, and it addresses internal controls and non-compliance over the financial statements. So if we had identified any non-compliance with laws, regulations, or if we had identified any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses over the internal controls for the preparation of the financial statements, they would have been addressed here. What this report is saying is that we did not identify any non-compliance. We also did not identify any internal control issues that rose to either a significant deficiency or a material weakness. And so that, again, is the highest level of report that you can receive under government auditing standards.
And are you done now? That sounds good. Thank you.
I've got another report to go. One more. And then our final report is under uniform guidance. And so this report covers your federal money, and it covers the major programs that we selected for testing. And this year there were some changes because of uniform guidance. We are on pages 88 and 89. That's that report. Page 96 also is the summary schedule, which identifies the programs that we selected as major. So this report that we're issuing on pages 88 and 89 relates to the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant, Family Planning Services, and the Partnership to Improve Community Health. And that those are the programs that are related to this report. And under this report, we issue an opinion on compliance. And again, we did not identify any non-compliance that would need to be addressed here. And we also issue a report on internal control over compliance. So for those three programs, we also did not identify any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses related to those. And then the last thing is the findings that had been noted in the prior year were all corrected, and corrective action was taken on all of those. We did not identify anything that was a repeat finding. None.
Thank you. So did you say that this is the best of the best? This is the best you've ever seen ever anywhere?
No.
Come on, Tammy.
But it was really good.
Yeah, thank you.
It was very good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I don't know if there is the one area that we usually do point out is that non-compliant. There's a non-compliance note that you do have that you did that, but just to make you aware of with your budget requirements, and that's note 2 in the financial statements. And we always feel like it's important to let you know that it didn't rise to a level of non-compliance under our reporting, but you do identify 2 of your funds that had some budgetary issues and have addressed the rationale for those. And so I just want to point that out. That would be on pages 42 and 43 if you wanted to dive into that.
Mr. Beers, do you or Mr. Devine have any questions, comments?
Sounded like the best report for a large one-county regional public health agency, though.
Yes.
In Clark County.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually, I do have one question. It's more just I'm still not real good with government accounting yet. I understand private sector. I got that really good. But on page 13, could you explain to me a little more detail about the $42 million greater liabilities and assets? In my world, that doesn't happen.
On page 13, that is the
MD&A.
Okay, the MD&A. Do you want to address it as your MD&A, or would you like me to address it?
I'll let you address it, because what it has to do with is GASB relationships and how we have to report. So I'll let the auditors report that, because it's not a GASB action that I'm in love with. So,
and it is, if you look at page 26 of the report, you can see where that $42 million negative net position jumps out at you. And it is related to net pension liability. So this has hit a lot of governments hard and have turned a lot of them into now having negative net position on their financial statements with the implementation of GASB 68, which was last year. And that's bringing on your proportionate share of the unfunded liability of Nevada PERS onto the books, which is $62 million plus some deferred inflows and outflows, which causes the negative $42
million. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But the thing I find interesting on that is that we have to record the liability, but yet we don't record the cash that's in the bank for that liability. The state has that.
Well, you're only recording the unfunded, so you're recording that negative net position. So that cash and those liabilities, this is like what's remaining.
Oh, so the state's underfunded.
That was correct.
Yes.
By about 30%.
Yes.
That was my only question. Thank you.
It's a lot bigger number at the city.
I bet.
What's the proportion at the city, Bob? About the same?
Say it again?
Proportion.
Yeah, the scope, the percentage and the scope is about the same, yes.
Okay.
This is what killed defined benefit retirement plans in the private sector, by the way. About 20 years ago, GAAP required this for public or for private companies.
So from my knowledge, what that means is that for Southern Nevada Health District, at this point in time, we're $42 million underfunded for our part of the retirement fund of Nevada PERS.
$62 million
For your part of the unfunded retirement fund.
And that's if everybody...
So the grand total that PERS, the grand total of the PERS promised to the states and the local government's employees is along the lines in the ballpark of $30 billion.
And we're unfunded.
Six or seven is unfunded. So if it's $40 billion, then we have $33 billion in assets. And that's a ballpark figure. I haven't actually looked at PERS financial statements for a couple of years. But the legislature is attempting to address this by charging us a higher rate than the current actuarial liability of this year's employees is.
Right. To build up
specifically
that
reserve. In the amount of 2.5% extra a year, which is about 1/40th of the grand total unfunded liability. It's a very hard thing to track from year to year, however, because the assets performance varies widely with management type and a number of other factors. And that becomes an important input to the actuarial liability.
But so if we had however many millions, is it 32 or 42?
It's actually 62. Your net pension liability is almost $62 million.
So if we had $62 million and we put it into Nevada PERS, then we'd be up to date. We'd be okay.
But you wouldn't. Yeah, you wouldn't do that. That's
No, I know we wouldn't do
but yeah.
that. We don't have to do it either, but I'm just asking.
You wouldn't do that.
That is theoretically correct statement.
That would fully fund our own liability, not including the cities,
yes.
The counties. Yeah.
Not including the cities, not including the county, not including the Washoe Health System.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Not including the State Department of Health.
Interesting.
So, Doug, on that sobering note.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the the capital report.
Second. All members opposed, please say nay. Motion passes unanimously. Agenda item 4 is to review, discuss, accept our cost allocation study.
Sharon McCoy Huber, Financial Services Manager. I sent out 2 reports in the portal, and what I'd like to do is look at the short report. There's a spreadsheet at the back of that report. And in looking at the spreadsheet, at the it shows a comparison between the cost allocation as proposed and the current cost allocation. The current cost allocation is 36.33%, and the proposed new cost allocation from 2014-15 would bring us down to 33.69. Now you have to remember, in fiscal year 2014-15, we were still paying 100% of the leases. So what we're projecting to happen in the next 2 years is that the fiscal year 15-16, it was 50% of the leases, but yet in fiscal year 16-17, which we're currently in, we don't have the lease expense. So you're not going to see the multiplier drop down for another 2 years. It's dropping down, but not down to where we project it should be, where in reality it probably should be about 26%. But like we all understood that with the amount of money we were having to fund in lease payments, there was a lot more dollars going into the overhead because of the lease payments. So we felt really good about the way the cost allocation plan came. It did come down because our administrative costs did go down for 2014-15 versus 2013-14. and we were satisfied with the way this came out. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
I do.
Oh, good.
When you say 26% or 33%, what exactly is that? What do you mean?
That means that the cost of the operating programs, in other words, clinical services, community health, environmental health, to support the administrative expenses, it's going to cost 26% of their expenditures to cover the administrative expenses.
Okay. Have we used Mahoney before?
We've used Mahoney probably ever since they started doing the multiplier. The county also uses Mahoney.
Yeah. So here's what I'd like to know. Let's say that it's 30%.
Okay.
I'd like to see how much overhead we're allocating 30% overhead to that is grant funded. Because that's why we do this.
Okay, this is just... Okay.
The reason we pay Mahoney is because we're going to go to our federal grant. We're going to say, included in our expenses to accomplish your mission you paid us to do is 30% of overhead attributable to that function.
Correct.
Pay us under the grant instead of with 8810.
Right, and they won't do that until we receive $35 million in direct federal funding. And currently we only receive...
Are we there?
No, we receive between $6 and $7 million currently.
So how much are we paying in Mahoney?
$10,000 a year.
Okay, so the reason we hire an outside expert is because, as you can see from his cover letter, there are some outside parameters. But they're only important when we're actually recovering overhead from the federal government.
Correct, but...
I'm wondering if...
Well, what this does allow us is that, like, in the short format with the cover letter and stuff, it allows us to send them the smaller packet with the spreadsheet and tell them that our multiplier is 33%, and then we negotiate upwardly. We have some grantors that are paying us 15%, some grantors that are paying us 22%. We have one grantor that's paying us all of the percentage, but the majority of them are only paying us the 10% de minimis amount that was outlined in the Uniform Act, Uniform Guidance Act. And the challenge that we have there now is because the federal government is getting creative, is that now they're trying to mandate that even if they give you the 10% de minimis amount, that they still want the documentation. And so now it's a new battle we're fighting. So my concern is if we stopped doing this because we're not at the 35 million, is that we wouldn't be able to justify attempting to get more than the 10% de minimis, which we are successful in some areas, and in, like I said, in other areas we're not.
I think this is Andy Glass, Director of Administration. I think one of the other values of this report on an annual basis is for us to calculate our internal costs for figuring our costs to provide services both in clinical services, community health, and in environmental health, so we understand what the direct and indirect costs are for those services.
And in my efforts to try to get more direct funding, it's helpful. For example, a lot of the grants that come to the state directly, the state takes its indirect off and then gives us what's left, and then we take as little as 10% off of ours. And so when I argue to federal funders that we should be more directly funded, they understand that. And they understand that, for example, more money would get to us directly if they didn't have to go through the state. And it's helpful in my discussions with them to let them know what our indirect or overhead is.
I understand, but entities have been calculating their own indirect overhead for centuries, actually. It's only the advent of Medicaid and Medicare, I think, mostly Medicaid, that has really activated the need for states to prove up this figure. States in particular to prove up this figure, because Medicaid is real careful about coming back after you if you charge too much overhead and making your state write in a refund check for overfunding your past administrative allocation. So the only point in having an outside expert do this is that relationship with generally the federal government. I'll leave that to you, Joe, as a management decision. Whether you derive significant benefit from it or not.
Okay.
Compared to the cost.
All right.
I just wanted to bring those points up to you.
We'll have additional conversations.
As I was reading over this afternoon, I didn't realize we were proving up our allocation every year.
We have had...
I would accept the motion. Are there any additional questions? I would accept a motion to accept the cost allocation study.
I'll make that motion.
Second, all members opposed say nay. That motion passes. On to agenda 4-5, review and discuss classification and compensation study report.
This is Andy Glass, Director of Administration. This remained as an agenda item when the meeting had been scheduled prior to the full board meeting. All the information from the class and compensation study that we have received has been presented to the full board. So unless there are any questions, I wasn't planning on going over anything in the future.
In other words, we should have removed this from the agenda, but we didn't.
Up an agenda has improved. So, any questions, Mr. Dobai?
No, sir.
Let's take up agenda item 4-6, discuss and approve recommendations to the Southern Nevada District Board of Health special meeting on December 12, 2016.
My guess from listening to you is that you would want to take forward to the full board a recommendation to approve the audit as will be presented to them as well, and the cost allocation.
We don't usually take the cost allocation to the full board.
So just the audit for the full board to pass in December.
What about agenda item 4-1?
Sub one?
The nomination of the chair of the finance committee.
Yeah.
We'll take that forward to him too. And we'll
right,
ask that person who was so nominated.
There's really not much for us to do here other than acknowledge that we're going to forward our recommendation for approval of the CAFR to the board.
That's correct.
I was going to say, I will make that motion.
I don't know if we need a motion.
I
guess we do. Yeah.
Yes. We always have had one.
Recommend to the full board at the special meeting on December 12, 2016. We recommend as a committee the adoption, the acceptance of the comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year ending June 30, 2016.
Correct.
Okay, I make that motion.
I'll second it.
Members opposed, please say nay. That motion passes unanimously. That takes us to agenda item 5, public comment, a period devoted to comments by the general public, and discussion of those comments about matters relevant to our jurisdiction. Our earlier public comment was restricted by putting down our agenda. Is there anyone who would like to speak at this time?
I do not see anybody.
We then we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.